because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin's Eye Look at This Week in the Capitol. J.R., 20 years ago, exactly, we were fighting over how to pay for Miller Park. Fast forward, you know, 1995? Mm-hmm. You remember the drama?
I was in college, so no.
Okay. I remember the drama. But fast forward, 2015, and now the Bucks funding cloud hangs over the Capitol. It's just so interesting now. Yeah. It really is.
Well, one thing, the Milwaukee Bucks, in talking to people, may be the most politically inept organization I've seen operate in the Capitol in a long time. It was fascinating this week to watch the president of the team say, we have a 10-day deadline to have something in place for joint finance to consider.
Yep.
And then hours later say, well, we're not putting a deadline on this thing.
Right.
Now, if it sparked the talks this week or had a role in the urgency, if you will, and then, hey, good for the team. But this team has been tone deaf from kind of day one about the realities of the Capitol. And now there are things that maybe they shouldn't be tied together whatsoever. But when one of the team owners, Lazary, is talking about bundling for Hillary Clinton, $270,000 her first week.
Yeah.
At the same time, you're asking for a state run by a guy who's going to run for president on the other side of the ticket. That's not exactly like winning you favors, if you will, among Republicans. And again, maybe it shouldn't be tied whatsoever. Maybe it's wrong to tie the two of them. But it's the optic that's happening with the Bucks. They just don't seem to get what the dynamic is. And oh, by the way, all these outstate lawmakers look at the Marquette poll going, wait, so let me tell you this straight. So 9% of people statewide want us to put public money into a Bucks arena?
I thought the Marquette poll said there was 79% against 17%, yes.
Yes, 9%.
Okay.
Outstate, I'm sorry.
Outstate.
Outstate people.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yes,
that's
outstate.
That's what you have to win over. Republicans outstate the ones who are going, wait a second, I don't see a point. What's the benefit for me and my district to support money for a Bucks arena in downtown Milwaukee?
And let's dig a little deeper into the Marquette poll. If you just look at City of Milwaukee respondents, 66% against, 30% yes.
What's interesting, though, is there's like this feeling or sense of they're going to get something done because they almost have to. They don't want to see the team leave, number one.
Yep.
Be embarrassing for everybody. Two, Walker put a lot of capital into like this plan. So, yes, he's kind of like stepped away and let Eric Shute run the show, if you will, as chief of staff in these meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be embarrassing in some ways for the governor to have put out this idea, this big, bold idea to keep the Bucks and have lawmakers just go, ah, we're not going
to
do it.
So, but all the power brokers on this deal came to the Capitol on Wednesday.
Yes.
Then, same power brokers at some table somewhere on Thursday. No major progress. Fitzgerald seems to be wanting to strike a pretty hard deal when he says, we're willing to have the Board of Commissioners of Public Land loan $220 million. There's a lot of ifs. Mm-hmm. He may want some of that local option. Sales tax for Milwaukee, he must be trying to strike a pretty hard bargain. Agree?
Well, what he's talking about the sales tax is that we have time. You say, look, if we have to get something done quickly, fine. But we have time to figure out the dynamic of how this is going to work out. And he's looking at the sales tax going, okay, the county has a dedicated revenue stream of $65 million, whatever it is a year. That thing of the BCPL say, look, we have a dedicated funding stream that no matter what is there.
Yeah.
So you can get us a good rate because we have collateral, if you will, for this deal.
Right.
The question is, how's the money going to be paid back? Will the city and county both take out a separate loan? Well, the state, because the state's going to be on the hook for part of this, but how they do is going to be interesting. They could, for example, bump up their shared revenue payments for the first X years for both the city and county to pay off their, you know, the initial shares, if you will, of the loan and say, okay, we did our part. You've now had 8, 9, 10 years, whatever it is, to figure out your stuff and get it together. Now it's yours. You guys have this benefit in your backyard. You've seen this money come in. Now you use it to your benefit to pay off.
But go back to what you said earlier. The president of the Bucks said, deal in 10 days. You know, that reminded me, the owner of the Minnesota Twins told the Minnesota Legend Gov the same thing. You know, here's your drop-dead deadline or see you later.
Yeah.
You know, we're packing up. But then they quickly said, oh, no. But it may have jump-started some of these closed talks.
Another interesting thing that Fitz brought up this week and talked to us is that the owners have put up $150 million and Cole, the former owner, $100 million. Saying, look, that's the first draw, if you will, in any project cost. If we have an agreement in place to do this, we could bring our financing package in on the back end, give us some more time, again, to work out some more details, get people in place, and also to give the city and county more time to get their stuff in order to pay it off. So there is an urgency, if you will, for a framework, but the details could, you know, there could be some squishy room, if you will, for that.
So you seem to think that a deal eventually is going to get announced, probably within days, do you think?
I get the impression they want to have something done.
Yes.
But the hiccup is lawmakers, Republican lawmakers outstate want money from the city of Milwaukee. They do not want Barrett saying, well, I'll give you a parking garage and some infrastructure, and that's my contribution.
And some land, and that's,
They're talking, we want a big chunk of change from the locals because this is a local project.
And that's why Fitzgerald is eyeing that revenue from the local option sales tax. Meanwhile, one other nuance here that I just find fascinating, Republican Senator Steve Nass says, let's not roll this into the budget. Let's debate this thing separately. Well, let's go back to what the Marquette poll statewide, 79% against, 17% yes. If it were, first of all, do you think it'll be a statewide bill? Secondly, if it is a standalone bill, excuse me, and if it is a standalone bill, is there any chance in the world it would pass with
poll numbers
like that?
Fitzgerald
it won't be a standalone?
Fitzgerald and Boston know if they pull that out of the budget, your standalone bill will never pass. Now, there is one thing they could do. They could put Democrats on the hook and say, look, you know, you guys, this is your city, because it's all a democratically controlled city. You want this Bucks Arena. You guys give us X number of votes. We'll find the rest and get it done that way. But I can't count on one hand the number of bills I've seen in my 15 years here where you had a handful of the majority party and all the minority party passing a bill. That doesn't happen.
That's right.
So that's one issue. It's just too heavy a lift, if you will, right now to get lawmakers outstate to back it.
Yes.
Now, here's the interesting thing. So in this budget process, right, you've got 19 Republicans down the Senate with Uwe Strobel back on board, that seat filled. Steve Nass has voted no in most budgets I've seen, I think, him take a vote on. So you're down to 18 maybe in the Senate. You can lose one more and still get that budget done.
Yeah.
Do you have to grease the skids, if you will, dress up the tree with something else to get a yes vote on the budget because the Bucks are in there? I mean, it complicates the political dynamic of the budget in some ways, having it there.
But on the same day that the Bucks came out with this gleaming architect's rendering of the new arena, Senator Harris Dodd of inner city Milwaukee, African-American, praised it.
Yep.
So that sends a signal that she could vote for a budget with it.
I don't think any Democrat can say, I'm going to cut for the level of aid for schools are talking about. Vote for
unresolved,
the...
Unresolved, because Walker now says any new money would go to K-12.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But it might be. I don't see how a Democrat votes for all the other bad things in their minds in the budget for that one piece. That's a tough sell.
Okay.
Now, remember Gary George, he got something very nice in the budget for Milwaukee.
Yes.
A few years back, so miracles do happen, but... That would be a tough sell back home to say, yeah, I supported Governor Walker's budget. The same governor that you can't stand,
right.
Democrats, because of all the other policies that he backs.
Right. Okay, next subject. We have a Supreme Court that reminds me of the TV series As the World Turns. the developments this week are just fascinating. A federal judge says, I won't stop the four conservative justices from electing a new chief justice in the wake of the constitutional change. Mm-hmm. Then we learned that the four... Most conservative justices, we're talking Ziegler, Rogozak, Prosser, and who am I missing? Gabelman.
Yes.
Yes. They're legal bills. Taxpayers may cost taxpayers up to $100,000. Mm-hmm. And Walsh Bradley
Crooks
says...
Crooks is also represented, but it's five of them. All five are represented by that law firm. Yes.
Right. But Ann Walsh Bradley said, I'm going to...
Yep. Number six. Yeah, she's on her own.
Yeah, she's on her own. So yep. Taxpayers... So you have a federal judge say, I'm not going to stop these conservative justices mm-hmm. from organizing. Then you have potential legal bills. Well, first of all, let's just talk about that. The election results on the constitutional amendment will be certified next week.
Mm-hmm.
Rogozak said, we think we're going to act pretty quick. Do you think we'll have a new Chief Justice 1 week from today?
Well, let's start picking pieces apart. I've seen Dave Prosser say it would be prudent to wait until August 1st. That's when the new term starts. Because even though the results are final next week, Ann Walsh Bradley's new term starts August 1. That means the current court's term is not up until then in July.
Okay.
So Prosser would be prudent to wait. Ann Walsh Bradley, I'm not think he's going to vote for new Chief Justice anytime soon.
Right.
Neither will Shirley Abramson. That leaves the four who are left. Well, do you get a majority for any one person? There's a theory that Justice Crooks, who's talked about running again, surprising people.
Who told you he hasn't decided whether
that maybe Justice Crooks wants to be Chief Justice, even if it's interim Chief Justice. And maybe this be like a little bit of a push from him of, hey, you know, I want this spot for a while. Now, Pat Rogozak has been the favorite, odds-on favorite by conservatives for a long time, that if this does pass, that she would be the next Chief Justice. So you got to get four votes. Where do you find the four votes? Now, of course, here's the other thing. The amendment doesn't define a lot of things with this election process. That's for the court to decide. So could the court decide, well, you guys need a plurality of votes? I mean, like, I don't know what the legal, I have no idea what the legal framework would be for this election.
It's a soap opera, that's why.
So the court would have to set a policy first, and then hold the, it could be interesting, to say the least.
Well, yeah, that's well. But I want. I was so surprised. You got an interview with Crooks, and he said, "I have not decided on whether to seek re-election in 2016 when he'll be closing in on 78 years old."
Yes.
Now, I'm sorry. Was I wrong to assume that Crooks was going to step off the court after 20 years on the court next year?
There was this email a year ago when she seemed to suggest it'd be easier for me to kind of go off in retirement and just not fight about this. That was like, okay, it's a sign he's not going to run again. Plus, he had his age and everything else, he's not going to run. I am not convinced in talking to other folks that there is really a possibility he's going to run for sure. Now, maybe he will. But here's the question. If you're Pat Crooks, who is your base? Conservatives don't trust you because you have now sided with Shirley Abramson and Amos Bradley on a number of high-profile cases.
Yes.
Liberals hate you being called part of the liberal wing because they don't see you as really being part of the liberal wing. Right. Who's going to help you from that side? There are maybe, a dozen people in Wisconsin who have run Supreme Court races or been high-profile spots with those races. Who's going to run his campaign? I mean, there are all these factors of where's the money come from, who runs it, is he going to campaign vigorously? I mean, no offense to anybody who's been around for a long time, but Justice Crooks, upper 70s, it's not really a young person's game to be traveling statewide, stumping for money and
especially when GOP legislators are talking about a mandatory retirement age.
Oh, and also, by the way, last time he ran, he was unopposed. Oh. He hasn't run a contested race since he won his first spot on the bench. Now, remember, he did have to run 2 years in a row. First year was a seven-way primary, I think, or something like that. But anyway, it's a lot to ask somebody who's not been an active candidate in 20 years to pick up, build an operation, and raise money.
Especially when the betting had been that Crooks was not going to seek another reelection. You have a few wannabes out there testing the waters. What would you think if
there is a theory, and now it's the Capitol. There are all kinds of theories.
Yes.
But there's a theory that this is Crooks kind of making a little power play for Chief Justice, saying, look, I might run again. And if you don't want me to, maybe you should make a Chief Justice for a while. And now, again, it's a theory. I'm not saying it's a great one, but there, the justices are behind these black robes sometimes. You don't really know what they're thinking and what the political gamesmanship is behind closed doors. So it'll be fascinating to watch what happens in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely true. This week, the state Senate passed a bill, sent it to the Assembly. We've had since the 1970s a law saying you can buy a handgun on a specific day, but you must wait 48 hours to take possession of it. The bill that the Senate passed would get rid of that. Very emotional testimony from Senator Harris Dodd, and who really talked about the names of children who have been murdered by handguns. And Milwaukee's murder rate is triple that of last year so far, and most of them have been killed with handguns. So why don't we take a minute to listen to Senator Harris Dodd as she chokes up talking about these children whose lives were ended by handguns.
Over 80% of Wisconsinites support universal background checks. And yet members of this Senate bodies sit quietly while neighbors are dying. The last time I stood before this body, I adjourned in honor of three young lives that were lost to gun violence. 10-year-old Sierra Guyton, 5-year-old Layla Peterson, 13-year-old Bill Tau. If you don't want to support this amendment today for me, do it for these children. These children will never be able to grow up and have a family, go to college, own a home, graduate from high school nonetheless. Do it for them. Support this amendment. Let's save countless lives.
Okay, but she's a Democrat in a chamber controlled by Republicans. So the sponsor of the bill, former City of Racine police officer Senator Van Wongard, said the waiting period isn't effective, and it's not the cause of all the gun murders, Milwaukee's increased murder rate. So now let's listen to Senator Van Wongard talk about why this bill, which did pass, should pass.
I would just like to say this. The cooling off period is a great talking point, but there's no empirical data to show that it makes any difference one way or the other. Victims are not able to defend themselves because if they go to purchase a firearm in Wisconsin, they have to wait 48 hours, even though the Department of Justice does more of a search than any other state in the United States in pinging 11 different databases and dozens of other other venues to determine if this person can lawfully possess a firearm. So this is about the waiting period. It's not about straw purchases. It's not about any of these other issues. Those are separate issues that could be addressed by other legislation. But here we have a situation where we have a mayor that's more concerned about putting a trolley car to nowhere in, spending money on that rather than putting the 200 officers on the street because they're below street strength on the street. And we have an issue where we have a chief of police that's blaming the legislature for this problem when it's a problem of the judicial system breaking down in Milwaukee. Let's take and let's prosecute the crimes we have. Let's get this thing passed and let the lawful citizen protect themselves.
So Senator Van Wongard said that it's judges and the lack of enforcement of laws on the books that are causing Milwaukee's murder rate. Let me ask you this question, JR. Are you surprised the Senate took up this bill given the triple murder rate so far this year in Milwaukee?
Not really, because it's a pro-gun legislature. This is a priority for them. It's something that the NRA likes. A lot of these guys have NRA backing. That's not a shock. And the argument is, look, it's not about 40-hour waiting periods or concealed carry or anything else with Milwaukee. It's about felons who have guns who shouldn't have them. So if you're not going to enforce laws in the books, what's it matter? I mean, how are you going to stop this? You have to crack down the people who shouldn't have guns, make sure they don't have guns, and do it that way. I mean, the guy who, for example, shot the man who hit the kid,
yeah.
Did he go out and buy a gun and have to wait with the waiting period of wait for anything for him? No. I mean, that's their point. It's not about this law. It's about what's on the books. And, you know, it's a hard argument for Democrats to overcome, because right now in the legislature, it's a pro-gun legislature. They're not really looking to say, okay, how do we crack down on guns right now?
So there's no doubt in your mind that the assembly's going to pass this?
That or that universal background checks are not going to happen for gun sales.
Those are two safe bets.
What's interesting is it was a voice vote in the Senate. So now there are people like Senator Dodd, who very emotional, very opposed to this, and then a voice vote. You know why? Because there are Democrats in vulnerable seats who don't want to take a bad vote, the NRA mad at them, and after the next election.
Okay.
That should tell you something about the politics of this bill. If you can't even get Democrats on board with all the gun violence going on, saying this is a bad thing.
Yeah, good point. Okay, now this is a point of trivia, JR, but so we're driving down the interstate, and you see roadkill, dead deer. You and I, we always have to look, don't we? So the issue is Governor Scott Walker recommended no longer paying $701,000 to pay counties to remove deer carcasses. So Finance Committee, that's going to upset visitors and tourists and everything. So the Finance Committee found from the forestry account $701,000.
Yeah.
However, only to remove deer on state highways and loosening the ability of, I've never done this, you probably haven't either, confiscate roadkill, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to notify DNR. You haven't done it, have you?
No.
Okay, I haven't either. So you have to more options. You have to notify DNR where, when, things like that. But here's my question, JR. Another DNR fact. It was on the same day of Earth Day. 57 layoff notices to DNR employees. Poor PR.
Not the best. Now with the deer thing.
Not the best.
What's happening is they're trying to transition the locals off of the state paying for the deer carcass removal and toward, okay, 2 years from now, this is going to be your job. So the transition is, okay, it used to be cover everything. Now we're covering state roads, using forestry money, no more GPR. 2 years from now, locals, you better be ready. This is going to be your responsibility going forward. The DNR thing, it's not
57
the best,
jobs.
Not the best PR, no.
Right.
It's also the science thing, the science debate. It comes around amidst the whole question of, okay, Republicans, you're telling the Board of Commissioner of Public Lands you can't talk about climate change
or global
on
warming.
State time.
Right.
You know, it gives an opening for those who are environmentalists to say, look, you guys are anti-environment, anti-science. Republicans are saying, no, this is just a matter of common sense, with the BCPL saying it's not part of your job to talk about this, so why are you spending time on it? But there is a tension right now between the governor and the legislature, a lot of things, and there are a number of lawmakers who I've talked to who don't want to see the science position go away. You need a science position, as they say, to do things, to figure things out.
Right.
It'll be an interesting rub, though, because lawmakers want to cut the number of state employees that we have. There are too many in their minds. They want to find efficiencies. They're looking for things like John Nygren this week saying, okay, Fish and Wildlife account, we have an imbalance pretty much every year. There are X number of open positions. Why don't we cut some of them?
Yeah.
They're not even real jobs. They're just there. We're going to cut this, I think 8% of what it was, 10%, leave a bunch there still and have flexibility, DNR, if you need them.
Yep.
But by doing it, you save some money off the books. There's going to be a big push for that. The Department of Revenue positions, for example, to add 100-some people, auditors who after people aren't paying their taxes, it should generate X million in revenue every year. Lawmakers saying, we're not sure we believe you. Right. It's going to generate that money. And, oh, by the way, it's adding to our role as state employees. We're not a big fan. So there's that rub right now in a lot of agencies.
But the roadkill, just a quick P.S., the roadkill numbers so intrigued me. The average cost to remove a deer roadkill in fiscal 2014, $28. Mm-hmm. But some counties paid $9.76, I think Juneau County. And one county, their number, $563. So maybe these are not the most accurate numbers in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. Your update? Our governor running for president?
Let's see. He was in New York on Monday for a fundraiser. He was in Iowa on Tuesday for an unannounced visit to the state capitol to talk to Republican caucuses. He was in Wisconsin on Wednesday, did his first public event, taking questions from reporters in almost
Appleton?
3 weeks. Yep. Grand Chute.
Yep.
Minnesota Thursday.
Talking to Leggies, party
again,
leaders.
Talking to Leggies, and then doing two speeches. And he should be in Cedar Rapids in about an hour, give or take a few minutes.
It's Friday. Our governor's in Cedar Rapids.
For his first event of the weekend in Iowa. So he is traveling, again, extensively around the country, but not in Wisconsin.
What should be read into the quote from billionaire David Koch? I want to read the quote to get it right. I think, speaking of Walker, I think he's been a very successful governor. He's reformed the union system in Wisconsin. He's got a wonderful, good-hearted character that I admire immensely. Was this David Koch saying, Mr. Bush, Rubio, Cruz, Scott Walker's my guy, and I am a billionaire?
Yeah. Interesting thing. Initially, after this fundraiser on Monday, I think he spoke afterward and praised the governor. The governor said he wasn't in the room when it happened, but suggested that he should be either should be the nominee, or once he is the nominee, that they're going to back him. Now that is, they call them the invisible primaries, if you will.
Yes.
So we have the primaries where you go vote in these states, but the invisible primaries are Sheldon Adelson, the Koch brothers, these people who are billionaires who have lots of money to pump in your super PAC and keep you afloat, a la Newt Gingrich, even if you're not doing well initially.
Right.
So this could be a huge, huge get for Walker if the Koch brothers are on board. Not long after that came out, they walked back the comments a little bit and said, well, actually, we're saying it when he wins the nomination, then we would back him. We're not getting involved in the primary. There are actually five candidates that we like. One of them is not Jeb Bush. And here's the interesting part about this. It's a sign from the Koch brothers of, we're not on board with Jeb. We want an alternative. There are lots of folks who see Jeb Bush as the kind of the establishment favorite, if you will, for the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a big chunk of the GOP primary saying, anybody but Jeb. Give me somebody, a conservative alternative to Jeb Bush. And so you have Rubio, Cruz, Paul, Walker. They're all vying for that mantle of the anti-Jeb Bush, if you will. So the Koch brothers could be huge for him if he gets those guys on board.
Well, last Sunday, I was watching a CNN political pundit panel, and Jonathan Martin of the New York Times said this, and I want to ask you, he actually, the issue was, so what rumors are you hearing, what predictions, and Jonathan Martin of the New York Times said, I'm hearing about a Walker-Rubio ticket. Have you ever heard that, JR?
That rumor's been around, yeah.
Really? So you have heard it?
Two young guys, one of the executive experience went out. Now, who's on top of the ticket? That's a good question.
Right.
What's been interesting is that Governor Walker shot the top of these Republican primary polls after the January speech in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen, though, and now these polls are all over the map a little bit, but you've seen a couple of trends. A couple of them have noted that as Rubio has announced, as Cruz has announced, Paul, Walker's support has eroded a little bit. Now, might it be a flash in the pan for Marco Rubio, for example? Who knows? You know, we're still a year, 9 months out, whatever it is, 8 months out from primaries. These are really kind of name ID and, like, very fluid things.
Right.
But Walker's position has been, I can unite the Tea Party wing and the business wing of the Republican Party and give a viable, you know, candidate who can appeal to everybody. If these guys can cut into the right-wing support of Governor Walker, that takes away part of his base. That'll be something interesting to watch. Now,
absolutely.
The immigration comments this week, now he's talking about legal immigration. I mean, there should be limits on that. The Jeffrey Sessions, the Alabama senator's position of, we should be putting restrictions. Now, Walker's saying, I've said this before, so I don't remember him saying anything like this. But
I don't either, JR.
But it could be a sign of Governor Walker moving to the right on immigration to outflank, if you will, the Cruz, the Rubio, the Pauls of the world, and keep that Republican kind of conservative base going and say, look, you know, and here's the thing. If you read conservative media this week, they're like, hey, this is great. It polls well to say American jobs should be protected, American wages should be protected, not just in a primary, but in a general election as well. There are lots of blue-collar workers who are going, yeah, I don't want to lose my job if somebody's not here legally, or even if it is legally. It should be Americans first, right?
Yep.
Okay, so it could have an appeal, if you will, even though it irritates a business class who's saying, Chamber of Commerce, Governor Walker, we need high-skilled workers from out of this country to come in and help fill certain jobs. If you restrict that, it hurts our ability to do what we want to do. Democrats who say this is, you know, borderline, you know, racist kind of thing, and that's being raised as well. So he's irritated both these establishment wings, but there might be a niche there for him if he keeps this, you know, going.
But let's look into the latest Marquette poll and two things. Number one, Hillary versus Walker in Wisconsin. Hillary wins 51-5 to 39-8. Did that surprise you?
Well, caveat that it is, you know, a year and a half out.
It's an eternity out.
Also that, you know, if you pick apart the Marquette poll, okay, they had more Democrats, if you include leaners and before, or whatever. So all those caveats said, okay, it's not a great sign that he's losing to Hillary Clinton in his home state.
Okay.
Now, home state governors running for president often have difficulties with their poll numbers. Walker's being polled at a time when his budget's not very popular because all these big pieces, the Bucks arena, K-12
cutting K-12, bonding for transportation. Yeah.
They're all big time unpopular ideas. Look at the Marquette poll. People don't like them. You have that going on. Every governor has a bad bounce, if you will, after his budget comes out because of the negative attention on the budget.
But both St. Norbert and Marquette have his approval rating at 41%.
Mm-hmm. The worst he's done in Marquette. The worst he's had in Marquette. And what's been interesting is we all have this assumption about Scott Walker in Wisconsin that he has a floor about 45% and a ceiling of like 52.
Yep.
All right?
Yep.
But he'll never break through, but that floor is always going to be there because people have so locked in on him, they will not go away. This is the first time I've seen people below 45%, him before 45%, because there's some folks going, okay, this is too much for me. Or I'm not happy running for president. You're not paying attention. We elected you 5 months ago, and you're in Iowa, New Hampshire. There could be all kinds of things.
Was it in response to this low approval rating that the governor's campaign, Our American Revival, announced that they're going to cover all of his travel costs, including the troopers that travel with him?
You know, good question, but I don't think it's going to be enough. I don't get the impression that's enough to offset the where's Scott Walker this week thing. I mean, look, Governor, if you go through his calendars from past years, he has been a road warrior in Wisconsin.
Yes.
The guy lives and breathes to be on the trail talking to people. Multiple trips in one day, you know, hitting Green Bay and La Crosse.
Three or four media markets in one day.
He's been excellent about that. That's not on his calendar anymore. He's not doing those things. Yeah. So that's a big issue for him as well, that he's been able to, one, govern as a conservative, but wrap his language in like this kind of soft blanket of it's not threatening to you moderate voters, and two, personally sell it to people out state. He's not doing that right now.
Fascinating. Well, which is a perfect lead-in for the Wisp Politics stock report. Rising.
Well, Dewey Strobel, so it completes the comeback.
Senator Strobel, yep.
We knew he was going to win. The second he won the primary, he was a shoo-in. But what's an interesting dynamic of Dewey coming back to the legislature is, his first thing he said was, my number one priority is repealing the prevailing wage. Now, here's the context of that. We just got through right to work a month or two ago, right?
Yep.
There's a theory that Republicans in the Senate don't want to do prevailing wage. Either they oppose outright repealing it, number one, or two, they're going, look, we just did right to work. Give us a break. You know, let's not poke the bear again on this stuff. There's that theory. There's also a thought of leadership's going, okay, look, we don't want to irritate the road builders, for example. They are hit by prevailing wage. They adhere to prevailing wage. They, by the way, are very generous to Republicans in elections over the years. Do you want to poke that bear with this stuff?
Yep.
And then three, maybe it's better in their minds to change the formula, how it's arrived at, to kind of drive down a little bit the cost, and B, raise the bar for when it kicks in. That's what you're going to see, my bet right now in the budget. But so Dewey, poor guy though, he's 2 months late for Act 10, got elected special election.
Yep, special election.
They do right to work just before he gets back in the legislature.
Right.
So he now prevailing wage is like, that's nice, but we're not quite sure we're there yet.
But you got him as rising.
Yes.
Okay, but mixed.
Scott Walker. I mean, great with the Koch brothers, the immigration thing. His former aide, Liz Mayer, who he dumped after 2 days because of past social media comments she made.
She was a social media coordinator.
Called it a full Olympic flip-flop, if you will.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Yes. And there are lots of people you talk to who are going, you know, Walker, what's going on? I mean, your brand is, I am Scott Walker. I believe what I say and say what I believe, and you can trust me. And now he's kind of maneuvering a bit. Now, the governor, politicians can evolve. You know, let's give him that opportunity. But where's the brand going with Governor Walker? What's the kind of governor? What kind of guy is he going to be? Candidate is going to be going forward? Will he be the Wisconsin guy who we know, who again, governed conservative, moderate language? I'm not out to do right to work. I'll stop getting my desk kind of guy.
Right.
Or is it the right to work is now the freedom to work?
Yes.
And is a great tool in Wisconsin to attract businesses. Which guy is it going to be going?
It's a ladder. Okay, falling.
Tammy Baldwin, you know, it's never good to be in a complaint because you have A, a cover up, and B, protecting your own political career.
Yeah, you're talking about the staffer who filed the ethics complaint.
So remember the whole Tilma VA thing. So Baldwin's office got this kind of report detailing problems at the VA months before it was released. They didn't act upon it. They fired this aide, Marquette Baylor. Report came out about a month later saying that she was partially to blame. There are other people who mishandled it.
Right.
She dinged her chief of staff. She docked pay for and demoted her state director. But Marquette was the only one who was fired. And the report, in Marquette's mind, places the blame on her feet. She's saying, no. This was you guys failing to do what you should have been doing, and you're unfairly putting the blame on my feet. Senate Ethics Committee, please go ahead and investigate Senator Baldwin. Now, here's the thing. The Senate Ethics Committee is not likely to go ding her for what was basically a botched report, right?
Yeah, right.
Lawmakers are loath to kind of ding their own unless there's something really egregious. So people I talk to don't think that she's going to get, you know, hit with some kind of fine or...
There won't be any sanction.
No sanction from this. But it keeps it alive. It provides fodder for the TV ads in 3 years when she's up. And here's the thing for
Another eternity. Okay, go ahead.
This is the first real scar of her time as in Congress. I mean, go back to her House days. She has not been somebody who's been caught up in controversy, right? This is the first real... And she's had a good reputation, by the way, for constituent relations. Here's her first real issue to deal with. How does she recover? She has some time. Now, the eternity you're talking about, there are all kinds of questions of the environment will look like in 2018, who's president, because often that drives how the environment looks like,
yep.
How the economy looks, yep. National security. So put that aside. She has to recover from this, get her legs back under her, and not have any more screw-ups, if you will,
right.
To help her out. Because, oh, by the way, I don't care what the environment's like in 18, Wisconsin is a more conservative place in off-year elections than in presidential years. She won, beat Tommy by 4 points, 5 points in 2012. Be a much different electorate in 2018.
Yeah, that's a good point. Meanwhile, everybody in the Capitol is tapping their fingers waiting on the LFB revenue estimates, aren't they?
Yes.
We can't get a joint finance final budget until we know how much money they have to spend.
Mm-hmm.
And Governor Walker said today, just a few days ago, there'll be a little bit more money. And what little additional money should go to K-12 schools?
Yeah.
Then not to reduce the $300 million cut in the university.
Yeah. If you're a budget wonk, and I know you are,
I am.
Here's something to watch. Governor Walker announced a series of cost-saving measures to help this current fiscal year balance, right?
Yep.
When the money comes in is going to be key, Steve, because of that money, if revenue picks up for this fiscal year, Walker can avoid those cost-saving measures and say, okay, we don't need to put off X, Y, and Z, pay for it now. Right. But by doing that, which saves long-term costs, you also drop the pot of money to spend in the next biennium. Now, I know this is budget wonkiness, but... If let's just pick $400 million, just for the heck of it. All right, $400 million. But Lang says 150 is in this biennium.
Yeah, lawmakers, 250 is on the out year.
You've got a smaller, you don't have $4 million to spend, you may have 250 to spend. Now I'm just pulling the number out of the air. There are also bits that then puts on some lawmakers, okay, where can we find GPR to take care of our priorities? Because there are pots. You've got to find them, you know, look hard to find them.
Yes.
There are pots to grab GPR to make it all work and budget tricks and gimmicks and everything else. But it could be an interesting and creative final month of joint finance.
Yeah, it really, really could. And we won't get those budget numbers from LFB probably till May 6th.
That's what Alberta was saying this week. Alberta, the co-chair of joint finance, May 4th, 5th, or 6th. They are counting the minutes until they see them.
They certainly are. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for April 24th.